through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Welcome to Tom, Jake, and Stacy, a Valentine's Day edition of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. Everybody who is celebrating or who declines to celebrate or who can't celebrate. Those are the people I feel the worst for.
Who can't celebrate?
Yeah, the people who can't celebrate.
Are you calling
Valentine's
out singles?
Day. I'm not calling them out. I'm feeling terrible for them.
I don't want to. Well, I just buy myself stuff for Valentine's Day.
You buy yourself what?
Candy and anything I want.
So you, all right, but you celebrate it, I guess,
yeah,
in your own way.
Yeah.
I feel bad for those who want a Valentine.
Yeah, I
and
do.
Who don't have one to celebrate
That's
with.
That's very nice, Tom.
I wish that everybody could have somebody to hold all the time. There's no good way to segue into Josh Norman here, so I won't attempt it. By the way, this hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Car Toys. You know, when you see these names out there, guys who get released, guys like Greg Olson, guys like Josh Norman, Paul Richardson, they're names that you know. And Paul Richardson's never really been a star at any position. I mean, Josh Norman's been a star. Greg Olson's been a star. So let's just take those two names. Because I guess we're going to hear from Greg Olson at some point today as to which of the three teams he's negotiating with he's going to pick. So we'll keep an eye on that for you. But let me just float a theory for Josh Norman as a human being. Josh Norman in Carolina, balling out for years, right? To try to make a reputation and name for himself. All those one-on-one, those battles with Odell Beckham, the trash talking back and forth. Josh Norman was a name. Josh Norman was a phenomenal corner. Probably like the corner of like the middle part of this decade. But then when it comes to getting paid, it could have been any team. It could have been any team. And it ended up being the dysfunctional, awful Washington Redskins. If you were in his shoes then, would you have said to yourself, oh man, I know I'm getting paid and I got to go for it, but does it have to be with this team? I mean,
right?
I heard the Garage saying with Clayton a minute ago that he'll never hold bad years in Washington against anybody. That made a little bit of sense to me. If I'm Josh Norman being paid to go to a bad job, like imagine you're taking a bad job, but you're getting paid like Mondo money. It's like, can you blame him if his level of play went down? I know he's 32 now, but there may be something left there with a guy like him.
I mean, maybe a little bit in that, I mean, you still went out there and played. You still appeared in, you played 13 or more games in all but one season in Washington.
How many? Finish. How many years?
He had four.
Four.
In Washington. Didn't have a single touchdown after the two he had in 2015. Obviously, you count touchdowns not as like a stat against someone, but
how
it was
many?
Going from that all-pro year he had in 2015.
Right.
Where he looked like that kind of game changer. He still, you know, has been a good player, but it's, I do agree in the sense that you wonder what his career could have looked like were he with a better defense. And it, you can't hold everything against him because anytime a great player, it's like seeing an early round pick go to a bad team. And you always think to yourself, well, give them time because I want to see what they look like in year two or three, not in the first year, because there's a reason they went to that team. Usually there's a reason that a team has a ton of cap space or really high draft picks. And it's because they aren't spending it on stars and they aren't winning. And so on the one hand, I get that. On the other hand, not on the other hand, it's easy to empathize with it because you think, man, the difference in the kind of payday I can get for this team could be millions, could be tens of millions.
Right.
And that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. When you're an NFL player, you have such a small earning window. And you know what? Sometimes you might buy in, and you might have just the right kind of conversation to get fired up with a coach, and you might have someone that comes to you and says, we can turn this program around, and you start to think, what if I can be part of that?
Yeah, what if?
I can see like, how you'd be sold on it.
You could go one of two ways. You're right. You can either talk yourself or be talked into the idea that wherever you're going, is on the turnaround and everything's going to be great. I mean, Jay Gruden had already been in Washington a couple of years. Things may be falling apart on him. Think about when did he go to Washington? 2016?
2016.
Okay. Imagine that the Atlanta Falcons, the team that ended up going to the Super Bowl that year, had been able to pay him big money.
Right.
And put him, an up-and-coming team, like Dan Quinn goes to him. It's like, look, we got Matt Ryan. He's ready to have an MVP year. We're going to go to the Super Bowl this year. You're the missing piece, and we're going to pay you big money. You don't think his level of play goes up at least a little bit?
Well, and it honestly would have, they weren't a great defense. When we were looking back, we were talking about the Seahawks and we were talking about what was the most lopsided team to make it to a Super Bowl. I think we settled on the 2016 Falcons as the most lopsided team, where their defense was not a top, 10, maybe not even a top 15 defense.
It got better at the end of the year, but yeah.
I think they could have won a Super Bowl with one or two playmakers on defense.
That kind of player, exactly.
It was that kind of difference maker.
So the question is now, at age 32, is his career over, or does he have a little left to prove?
I think he's still got enough left to prove. I think that there's still... The thing is, it's just not going to be as big of a contract as you were going to get, when you were 28 and you signed with Washington.
Right, and now he's got to accept that, right? His agent's going to come back to him and is going to say, all right, well... Here are the teams that are interested. Here are the dollar amounts for each team. You have to swallow this. You're not getting another big payday because it hasn't been pretty the last couple of years. But we've got a team in the Seattle Seahawks who think that they're maybe a pass rusher and maybe a U away from being, back to what they were.
I do sometimes wonder if teams like Seattle look at players that way, that they'll bring in someone and someone says, oh, his prime is behind him. But, maybe Pete Carroll, a defensive-minded head coach or a front office, looks at him and says, oh, that defense was awful, though. Like, what could he be with a better team? I mean, I think that they kind of maybe looked at Clowney that way. Not that their defense was awful, but they looked at that and said, we think he'd be better in a 4-3 base defense, or we think he'd be better in our scheme. And so we are willing to take that risk. Even though he's never had more than 9 sacks in a season, we want him to come up here. And even when he wasn't producing the sacks that people wanted him to, Pete Carroll was still saying he's transitioning to our scheme and our defense, and we like the way he's doing it.
It's different, though, when a guy's like Clowney, for example.
Who's 26.
You're right. He's right in his prime,
yeah.
Or at least he should be.
Yeah.
Norman's already shown you, I think, the best of what he can give. But at the right dollar amount, that doesn't mean that you wouldn't bring him in here to push Trey Flowers a little bit.
You have to think there's a little bit he could do. I mean, Richard Sherman, is he turning 32 this year, 31? You can still perform in your 30s. Obviously, you don't have as much time, but I think people see that 3 and they think, oh, that guy's washed. And that's not always true.
You're right. It's not. Why am I?
Why are we doing this? Why are we shaming 32-year-olds?
Ageist.
We're being awful. You know what? Give Josh Norman and all those other 80s babies a chance.
I like Josh Norman when he was like, the guy, the cornerback, the trash talker. Something about like the vibe that he sent out was good.
I know you've said you want that on the defense again, that you felt like it was missing this year.
Yeah, and I'll take it wherever. Look, and if he came here, he might not even end up being a starter, and that's fine. But if they got him on the team, and maybe he wouldn't be okay with that, right? Maybe he wants to go somewhere where he can start and he can play. I don't know how important that is to him. The XFL Dragons home opener is tomorrow, Stacey. What do you think about that? We're all going to be there, by the way.
I'm excited to all watch it together.
Yeah, that should be interesting. Now, we're behind one of the end zones, I believe.
Are we?
That's what I've heard. I've heard the lower bowl is basically sold out.
If it's the suite that I was at last time, we're behind the south end zone.
For a Seahawk game?
Wow,
Seahawk.
How often do you go to suite, Stacey?
I popped in one time.
Often.
Yeah, I mean all the time.
I don't think it's that sweet. I don't think it's that sweet. You know, I sat in that suite, I think, for the Guns N' Roses concert a few years ago.
Oh, gosh.
It was close to that anyway. For any of you who are going to be there, if you see us walking around, feel free to say hi. I think this XFL thing is really going to work here in Seattle, and I think it's going to look different in CenturyLink Field as opposed to maybe some other stadiums. I think Seattle fans will bring it.
I think I am most excited about the excitement factor of the XFL becomes exponentially more to me. Not that I'm not looking forward to this weekend, when I think about its longevity, because if you think about an XFL in year 3, you'll have players on that team that we're watching in the NFL now that just need a second chance. So when we were talking about, well, the XFL It's really exciting, but, you know, they need some star power to survive, just like any league. And they have some of that, right? Cardale Jones was kind of the story of the, I almost said the Seahawks, of Seattle's season opener in D.C. But it'll be fascinating to see those borderline guys. Like, you wonder if a guy like RG3 would have gone to the XFL, or not Johnny Manziel, but a guy like, say, Baker Mayfield never works out. That's a star. I think he'll be fine in Cleveland. I think he'll work out.
But, I don't know. I'm not convinced he will. I think you could be onto something there.
But I am fascinated to see the kind of talent that can get into that league, kind of as it becomes more of another chance for NFL players.
Right now, I got three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
If sports gambling becomes legal in Washington, will more people start gambling?
Yeah.
They will?
I have a hard time believing they wouldn't. If it becomes legal, because if it becomes legal, I would guess, if I'm remembering correctly, when it first became something with New Jersey wanting to do an app or something, they just wanted to make it more easily accessible. And I think once you do that with something that's legal, everyone wants to do it. Not everyone, but I think absolutely you should see the money going into that industry rising. Also, it could happen by this spring. I didn't realize it was that quick.
Right, but you think people who don't gamble will start gambling? I think there's a trait, and I don't know what it is, but like Jim Moore in the garage, like people who
they'll take a bet for anything.
Right, people who like to gamble, gamble. People who don't.
You know, that's true, because I've never gambled a day in my life.
You're right.
I get rid of my money?
I've gone to casinos and, you know, played the slots. I've lost maybe, you know, $200 on blackjack in my life.
I lied. I went to Emerald Downs once, and I bet on a horse called Lean Cuisine.
Because it was called Lean Cuisine?
Yes, obviously.
I think the accessibility of it will probably see an increase in people gambling around here, because there isn't that stigma anymore of, like, I got to go to an offshore bookie or here, you know, like.
But the people who are doing that.
What if there are people that are less interested once it's legal? Never mind. It doesn't have that danger factor.
The people who are doing that, Curtis, who are betting offshore.
They're serious
gamblers. They're already gambling. Like, nobody who doesn't really gamble, like, you know, maybe gambles once a year, goes to bet offshore.
I think you could still. I still would expect those numbers to go higher.
Huh. Next question.
Number two.
What will you be looking for tomorrow at the Dragons home opener?
I'm very, very curious to see if Kaysen Williams has a chance to play. Jake, I think, implied that he would. Fans didn't get to see him in the season opener, and I think he was the player that people were most excited to see, because people were really rooting for him to stick with the Seahawks and to make that final 53. And it was a big conversation, debate, and controversy when he was released during those final roster cutdowns. So I am really hoping that he's healthy enough to play Saturday.
The Dragons, actually, they released their injury report for Saturday, and Kaysen Williams has been ruled out with a quad injury.
Well, way to go, Curtis.
Yeah.
Well, way to go.
That's on the Dragons. That's not on me.
Well, I guess you don't have to go to the game now.
In that case, I would love to see a spectacular catch. Because don't you remind me, in the XFL, you only need 1 foot in. It's college rules for catches, right?
Yeah.
I think that could be pretty cool.
What about the double pass? Where you can pass it forward twice.
Was there
in
a
one
team
play?
That did that?
I don't think so.
Why would you need to do that? I heard about
why
that.
Why not?
But like, what? So wait, so your quarterback is getting, he's, you know, running backwards. He throws it forward behind the line of scrimmage, and
the
whoever catches it gets to throw a pass.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine, but
Hit your relay, man. Hit your cutoff, man.
Yeah. Is it a forward pass? Do you have to be behind the line of scrimmage no matter what?
The guy who catches the first pass has to be behind the line of scrimmage.
Oh, okay.
Next.
Number three.
You know, you get to about the middle of the season, the middle of the NFL season, and you see these segments on ESPN or NFL Network or whatever, and it says coaches who are on the hot seat or quarterbacks who could be cut or, you know, guys who are about to lose their jobs, essentially. Do you ever feel weird as media or as a fan calling for somebody's job, even if they do legitimately underperform?
All the time. All the time.
I think it's a weird thing.
It's very awkward to do, and I've not personally been the subject of criticism about not doing that, but I think that sometimes folks in the media are called out for maybe not being as brutally honest as they should about players. But you have to think, if you're a beat reporter or someone who's covering the team regularly, you're in that locker room, you're talking to players, depending on what outlet you work for or whether you're regularly on that beat, you're talking to players every single day. A lot of these guys, you've been talking to them, you know, 4 days a week for 4 years. I mean, you go in the locker room now and there are reporters like John Boyle, who we have on During the Huddle, who covers the Seahawks for the team right now. You'll see him. I mean, he has such a good relationship with so many of these guys.
That's easy for him because he doesn't have to
obviously
go after the team.
Obviously, he's not going to be going after the team, but it becomes tough to interview someone and to be like, man, that guy was really genuinely so nice. And it's awkward. It's also someone's job. Like,
yeah,
you know,
would
it's
you
their
ever
livelihood.
Call, right. Would you ever call for somebody's job who doesn't work in sports? Like,
no,
for no reason?
Well, sometimes people do it with politics. Any public-facing job. If it's a public-facing job, yeah. But I think people do it more often with sports because there's more emotions with sports. People see a horrible game and they're like, cut this guy. I mean, I post anything about CJ Procise, who's going to be an undrafted free agent, and you can't cut him. And the top three things will be cut him.
Yeah, and look, Procise is a good example. The guy's trying hard to be out on the field. Like, he's not slacking it, like, ah, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that's kind of out of his control, and you think, oh, like, this is awkward, because if I were the team, I wouldn't re-sign you, but also it's not your fault, and I kind of hope that you land somewhere.
This occurred to me the other day when we were doing a quick game of keep or cut, when we were going through, like, some of the cap casualties.
Yeah.
Right? And I was thinking, I was like, you know what? We're going through, say, yeah, cut this guy or keep this guy. It's so draconian.
It is. It really is. It feels really awkward. And I think it's important to, if you're doing your job, kind of be honest about what the team doesn't or does need or what would be a waste of money from your opinion as a sports reporter or as a fan. But it's still someone's job. So try to be.
Yeah, I'm not in that business. All right, Stacey, do we have to talk today?
Like to each other?
No.
Oh, okay.
About your little Valentine's excursion?
My Valentine's excursion for Jess?
No. The other thing. You don't want to do that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Stacey, you know what he's talking about.
No, I don't.
You can just say no and I'll move past it, but no. You have to acknowledge it.
No, that's okay.
You're sure?
Yeah.
Because it is Valentine's Day, and you know, we're hard up for ratings. All right, well, I'll try and convince you in the break there. Is there anybody? So I guess we're going to hear from Greg Olson at some point today. He's going to decide. I mean, what time during the day would you set as a deadline if you were Greg Olson? Like 4 o'clock Eastern, which would probably be like 1 o'clock around here? If you're negotiating with 3 different teams, trying to figure out which one is going to be the best deal for you?
I'm so used to 4 o'clock Eastern being a standard deadline for everything with the league, because that's the league deadline.
Yeah,
for
and
so
even baseball,
things.
Like for the trade deadline.
4 p.m. Eastern is always, yeah. Let's keep it standard.
Plus, it's a Friday, so he probably wants to get it done even earlier.
If you're Russell Wilson, it could be a deadline of like 11:59 p.m.
You know, there are days
just in time to send a video.
There are days where I think about that, and I still cannot believe that deal got done. I was convinced up until the minute where that video came out, there was no way it was getting done. That Russell set that date because he knew the Seahawks wouldn't be able to meet it.
Really?
Yep. I thought I truly bought in to the idea that he wanted out, that the Seahawks undervalued him, and he wanted to go with his wife to New York and to be, you know, whatever. They probably end up franchise tagging him first here.
Yeah.
But I was so dialed into that narrative.
Well, and then it's a win-win either way, because if you stay, it'll be for a lot of money. I tend to buy what Jake says, which is just that it's an effort to just get it done and keep it from dragging out and to kind of...
Well, that's what it ended up being. Yeah,
I think,
absolutely.
Too, if I'm a quarterback who has been the franchise quarterback for this team for the better part of 10 years, I want a little more power and I want a say and I want to be kind of a more vital part of this team. I want to be right up there talking to the coach and GM for important decisions, not for drafting or whatever, but it's affecting my career and I want a little more autonomy. And I think that was a way to establish it.
Maybe. And, you know, he may have looked around the league and seen other quarterbacks who have those things. Like Peyton Manning, Brock talks about it all the time. Even back in like 2003 and 4, Peyton Manning like ran the show in Indianapolis. Like he was it. All those things that you think maybe Russell was after, Peyton Manning had. Russell may have looked around the league and said, well, you know, this quarterback
Aaron Rodgers
allowed to do this. You're right. Yeah. He's allowed to do this and he's allowed to do that. I'm that guy in Seattle. Why shouldn't I?
Right. I want to know that I'm respected. I mean, there's already a rumor that Brady would stay with the Patriots if Belichick and Kraft openly tell him, like, we want you to stay. Like, who knows how much legitimacy there is to that rumor, but it's a rumor that I kind of buy because it, and like, personally, because it makes sense that after this 19-year run that we've had, I want to hear I was just as much a part of that and that I wasn't this dispensable piece.
I'd want to hear that if I were Tom Brady. At his age, though, I'm not sure I'd want the same things that Russell wants, like say in decisions. Like at Tom Brady's age, like I'm looking at Belichick and Kraft, like, you know what? You guys take care of that nonsense. I just want you guys to tell me that I'm great.
Yeah.
And I'll be over here throwing passes for you until I fall over.
Yeah. If I'm the quarterback, if I'm the franchise quarterback, I want to know that I'm the piece that you cannot afford to lose.
Mike Salk steps in next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
And I'm glad to have Mike Salk in here with us once again. It's only three of us. Jake Heaps is out today. You know, we've been talking about names like Greg Olsen. Josh Norman, his name is out there today because the Redskins cut him. Paul Richardson also out there. Now, Richardson's not exactly ancient, but when you hear some of these older names, Olsen, Norman, even like a Josh Gordon who's, you know, getting up there in age, how does that make you feel? Are you always kind of tempted or how do those older names, proven names, make you feel?
Yes, I'm always tempted. How can you not be? When you hear a name you know, you can't help but be tempted to say, oh, I know what that guy looks like. I want him here. I've seen him have success in the past. I also, at the same time, try to remember and keep that in the back of my mind that if you've heard of somebody who doesn't play for your team in the NFL, by the time they're available, they're probably not that good anymore.
And these guys are long past
right.
that.
I mean, like, it's just it's not 100% accurate, but generally, guys in the NFL that are available that you've heard of aren't that good or aren't at the peak of their career anymore, especially if it's not their first shot at free agency. And so that's not to say you can't find value. And Norman, I think, is definitely somebody they should be looking at and determining whether or not he's got anything left. It's a position of need for them. But if you think that guys who have been released, guys who are on their second or in this case, maybe third contract, if you think that they're going to be your savior, they're probably not. It's not to say you don't need some players like that, but what the Hawks need are impact guys. And when Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril came over, they weren't the hottest names. They weren't household names coming from Tampa and from Detroit. They were good players who were just about to get even better. That's a big difference from formerly great players who are on the downward trajectory of their career.
Do you think by that measure that every free agent, every big free agent's probably a guy that's getting overpaid?
I mean, yeah, there is an element of that, but you know, you can afford to overpay some of them right now. I just think you got to be careful. If you're the Seahawks, what you need is impact on the defensive line, getting to the pass rusher. You know, Brock is always adamant that this is where you start looking at trades, bundling things in order to, you know, the Seahawks have had some luck with trades in the past. And you look at some of the impact guys on their team, Clowney and the left tackle, Dwayne Brown. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how they got Marshawn Lynch was in a trade. I mean, John Schneider's had some success making deals with people. It's not the only, and he's not 100% effective. Obviously, Sheldon Richardson is sort of the other side of that. But, you know, he's done a lot of good things by looking to make trades and not just signing in free agency. So I really don't care how you find the impact guys, but they need impact players, not just depth.
Do you think getting Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril in the same year made us greedy.
Yes.
Like we think that we can just go out and get any old veteran right now.
Yes.
And they'll have an impact on the team.
Yeah, I do. There is an element of that was a unicorn year where they were able to get both those guys. But they weren't the top two pass rushers available. I think what you got to do is go back and remember what that season was like. There were a bunch of different guys that were out there. Paul Kruger was the biggest name in pass rushing that year. He was coming off a good season in Baltimore, I think it was. And everybody wanted Paul Kruger, and there were two or three other guys as well. I don't remember now all the details, but Bennett and Averill were like, yeah, they were third and fourth or fifth and seventh on the list of pass rushers that people were interested in. The important thing was that they got both. The important thing was they already had Chris Clemens, they already had Bruce Irvin, and they didn't go just get one. They got two and said, we are going to overcommit to this position and make it one of dominance for us. And you see what it did for the next, what, three seasons or so, two with Clemens and then a couple more after that. The Seahawks got after the quarterback, and as good as Earl was, as good as Cam and Sherman and the rest of those guys were, they were greatly benefited by the fact that quarterbacks never had any time to do anything.
We've spent the last few weeks going over what we think the Seahawks need to do to get back to a Super Bowl, and we've been purposely trying to not be predictive because we want to lay out our own blueprint and say, okay, we think this should happen. And I feel like in general, the three of us, everyone else in sports radio, just you start saying like, this is what I think should happen. You have an opinion. But I actually want to get predictive in this moment. Do you actually think the Seahawks will make big moves or acquire a big star in free agency?
I think so. I don't know. It's a great question. I mean, we've seen John kind of go in both directions, right? Surprise the heck out of everybody with the Jimmy Graham trade. I remember Kyle and Brock and I were literally driving to the airport to come back from spring training. Oh, wow. And the Jimmy Graham news broke and we were at the airport running around like chickens with our head cut off. We just thought it was like the most exciting thing ever. You know, at the moment, I thought it was such a good deal. In retrospect, it is the single worst thing John Schneider has done as GM of the Seahawks, and I believe that strongly, that it was the end of what the Seahawks were. It was the end of their identity, that they tried to get a pass-receiving, no-blocking tight end for a team whose identity was supposed to be tough and running the football. It's just, in retrospect, it's a horrible decision.
You don't think it would have been different if they used him differently?
Nope. I think that it took them out of their chosen identity. It was outside the norm of what they wanted. And yeah, maybe if they had decided that in that moment they were going to change their identity, it could have worked. But Pete didn't want to change his identity. They wanted to make a guy who couldn't fit their identity into it. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
In retrospect, at the time, man, was it exciting. So we've seen John go after those big names. I don't know whether this is, you know, whether he likes specifically anybody who's out there right now, but I'm sure willing for him to try. I think this is the season they've got to do it in order to push them back over the top. I hope, I don't have an answer for you,
yeah,
but I hope so. I really do.
I want to go back to the Astros thing for 1 second. Yesterday, Jim Crane melted down, the owner of the Astros, in front of a press grouping there. What do you think it is that we want as a public from guys like that who are clearly in trouble?
We want blood, right?
Well, I feel like we want them to sound like they feel bad.
Not to grovel.
Like they feel bad about what they did.
Hey, you want one of two things, right? I think it's one of the two things we just mentioned. You either want, you know, like Carl and Die Hard, I want blood. Like you want punishment. You want to know that this guy's life has been ruined, which I don't necessarily care about, but some people do. Or, yeah, you want to know that there's some real contrition there. I don't think you're going to get either one of those things with Jim Crane. Like, I don't see it happening. I think what you're going to get instead is a bad guy. Instead, you get a villain. You've got somebody that you're going to be able to root against. I think people are going to have a blast going to Astros road games this year,
yeah,
and cheering like heck against the Astros and booing them and coming up with creative ways to make fun of all the players on their team. I think there's going to be trash can banging everywhere they go.
I think there's going to be giant TikTok buzzers. It was awesome.
Oh, I saw that too. Oh, I thought I showed it to you.
Oh, did you? Yeah, it was great.
We ended up both seeing it. I'll take credit for it.
All right. I'll retweet it later. Sorry.
But. People are going to get into it the same way they did with Barry Bonds. You know, I remember being at Fenway Park as a reporter when Barry Bonds showed up there for the first time, maybe in forever. It might have been his first appearance ever because of the way interleague play had worked out. And this was 2006 or 7, something like that, when he was at the height of crushing the ball, but also, you know, everybody knew what had happened. And nobody was angry. Nobody was everyone was just having a great time going down and booing Barry Bonds. It was a blast. It was one of the most fun days I've ever had at a ballpark. And everyone was sort of in the same spirit of, hey, won't it be fun to go down and boo Barry Bonds? I think people are going to treat the Astros that way. Hey, you guys want to go to the ballpark and make fun of the Astros? Yeah, let's go do that. I think it'll end up being good for them, baseball.
I have one last question for you. If 10-14 UMass beat number 6 Dayton tomorrow, would that be an upset?
I think it might be.
Even though UMass is at home? Anybody could have seen this coming.
UMass and Dayton, you know, Tom, when those two teams get together, you can throw out the records. There's no such thing as an upset. Is that old Atlantic 10 matchup? Was Dayton in the old
A-10?
Is it still the A-10?
I think they're in the A-10 now. I don't know if Dayton was always in it.
UMass has always been in the A-10. St. Bonaventure.
You didn't call out on air that my Stangs beat you guys the other day.
The Stangs?
The Stangs. The SMU Stangs. They beat UConn.
Who were the Stangs?
SMU. I decided to adopt them as my favorite team.
That was nice of you.
3 months ago.
Really?
Yeah.
They're the ones that got the death penalty, right?
Yeah, that's why I did it.
That's nice of you. You like sort of the resurrect. They're sort of the Jon Snow of college sports.
I forgot why we initially did it. We decided to be SMU fans for some game that we were telling each other we need to watch.
Go Stangs.
Mike Salk with us as he is every single day. You know, today's Valentine's Day, Stacy, and I'm looking online. Somebody tweeted out these old school Valentine's that you like.
Is that a raisin?
It's a California raisin, actually.
Okay.
But it's the type of card you used to like give to your classmates when you were in elementary school. Did you guys do that?
Yeah, it was the everyone gets a Valentine's policy.
Okay, I don't know if we had that policy when I was a kid, although if I remember right, I feel like the project was go get a bunch of Valentines and write them up for everybody in the class.
All I remember is that there was one time this guy, we were in like fourth grade, this guy wrote me a Valentine. He wrote me a Valentine. And it was like a puzzle that I had to solve, and it said Stacy Rocks. And I was like, that's mean, because I thought he was making fun of my last name, Rost. And I thought he was teasing me. I didn't get it.
Did you ever clear that up with him?
I hope so. I might have stayed mad at him for a while.
Oh, my God.
It's heartbreaking to think of now.
He felt terrible.
I mean,
sure.
It's fine. Man, ate ants.
You know what? I remember in third grade in Miss Macbeth's class.
Lady Macbeth? Did you call her that?
No. Well, maybe. No, we didn't. We didn't know what Shakespeare was. But I got
some school.
I got, you know, all 25 or whatever Valentines from everybody. But the one girl I really liked in class, her name was Samantha.
Yeah.
I was like staring at that Valentine like all day long. I was like, maybe there's a possibility that she likes me, even though everybody else gave me a Valentine.
And she made it out to Tim.
No.
Oh, Samantha, the one that got away. She's your great white buffalo.
Well, in third grade, she was. I don't know whatever happened. I think she moved away at one point. Shannon Dreher has not moved away, but she is in Arizona. So she's going to get us caught up on what's going on with the Mariners. We'll talk to her next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
And joining us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline is Shannon Dreher from down in Peoria. Shannon, how you doing down there?
Doing well. How about you guys?
Well, we're all doing better than Mitch Haniger these days. He underwent his second surgery in 3 weeks yesterday. And we heard that his start to this season is going to be, quote, significantly delayed. How worried are you about Mitch Haniger? I mean, it feels like this is Michael Saunders all over again, except worse.
Yeah, it's been a tough go for Mitch. And I think watching him try and come back from the initial surgery last year, it was just kind of eye-opening at how rough it was. And the time that it was taking and not quite being there at the end of the year. And he stayed a little bit extra in Seattle to try and kind of accelerate the process and get back into, you know, some sort of baseball activity before shutting it down for the winter. And unfortunately, when he came back up and started to, in early January, get ready to ramp things up and started taking some bigger swings, came the sports hernia issue. And that on its own can be pretty serious, especially for a baseball player that is so rotational. And it's tough to come back from. It's a tough rehab. It's very precise in everything that you have to do. And then to see the tweet last night at 8 o'clock from Jeff Passan was just surreal, that another surgery, and this time it was his back. And he had had some back issues it's concerning, but you know, the fact that they went in and the back surgery, I've talked to a couple of people about it, nobody affiliated with the Mariners, but it is, you know, something that has done so much more these days, and it's a very small incision, and it's something that once it's taken care of, you generally are okay. I think the tougher recovery is actually going to be from the surgery that he had a week ago on the sports hernia, and that's going to be tough, but, you know, we're not going to see him for some time. They're not putting a timetable on it. I think it's going to be a while, but the key is going to be he's got to do everything right coming back. And I just, you know, it's tough for the player. The Mariners had already backed themselves up because they knew he wasn't going to start the season. So they already had a plan in place. But this just, you know, for him personally, this has been blow after blow after blow. And you just hope that, you know, the mentality is there and he's able to attack the rehab and just get back to what he was a couple of years ago.
Hey, Shannon, there are obviously a lot of prospects I'd love to talk to you about and get your opinion on. But for the sake of fans who want to be excited about this team early and jump right in when the season starts, is there a player, whether it's a veteran or a new guy, who's expected to break camp with the big league team that you're either excited to see, intrigued by, or that fans should be excited to see?
Well, for me, I've already seen a bunch of them. I think the ones that are still a little bit further off are the ones that you're going to get really excited about when you're talking about the Jared Kelnicks and the Julio Rodriguezes and even the Logan Gilbert, who I think we will see sooner than later, but not opening day. And he threw a bullpen today, and just watching him in person, that was so exciting. He is a, you know, very, very large pitcher, tall guy, and the delivery is effortless, and the ball just comes out of his hand. Just, you know, this is third or fourth bullpen for him, and you could see velocity on it, and it was pretty impressive. But so for me, I think what I am most looking forward to watching is, you know, the starters. And we don't know if Justin Dunn is going to be in the rotation or not, but Justice Sheffield will. And this is the year where it's time for him to take the ball every fifth day and start taking steps forward. He hasn't had much exposure at the big league level, so it's still going to be a bit of a process. But for me, that's the one that I'm going to be the most intrigued to watch. And he's fun to watch, too. This guy's a competitor. He's fiery. It should be fun to watch out on the hill.
Talking to Shannon Dreher here on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Shannon, we know that 2020 is not supposed to be about wins and losses. It's supposed to be about the development of these young players, at least according to Jerry DePoto. But, you know, these players are still competitive people. And over the course of 162 games, if they're losing big, that's got to weigh on them. I see, I'm somebody who thinks that wins and losses are important to the players and their development, but not so much maybe to the overall overall rebuild of the organization. What do you make of that?
Well, I agree with you, but the path around that would be to take this a little bit slower and bring in veterans to have, you know, get you 75 wins instead of 63 wins, that kind of thing. So do you want to sacrifice a year to do that? I don't know that you do. But if you're going to do it this way, and if you know that there are going to be losses, you really need to be on top of it so you don't lose the young players. And, you know, and to that end, they brought in, the staff looks very different. We're playing a little game down here of, is that a player or is that a staff member? They're so young. A lot of the new additions to the staff. And a lot of them are very familiar to the younger players. They are organizational people. They are people that they saw at Double A or even Low A, or people that came through, you know, in a roving capacity. So I think that's important. But the other thing, and I was really happy to hear this yesterday, you know, they brought in Hirano, and Scott Service said, yes, he will be pitching at the back end of games, and be that in a leverage situation in the eighth or a closing situation. But he also said that there was a chance that they could bring in some more arms that could do that, because the wins are important. And that's always been my feeling. When you have got a rebuilding team or a young team, and a team that you know is not going to win a lot of games, every win is precious. And when you're giving up those losses in the ninth inning, I think those are the most costly. And they didn't really, you know, do that last year to go in and bring in a guy that can lock those down. And there are other years when they didn't do that as well. And so, you know, the fact that there was a little bit of an effort to do that and a little bit more of a focus on that this year, I was very happy to hear that.
Shannon, you have a ton of new stuff on 710sports.com. One of the more recent ones is your notebook on Yusei Kikuchi. You said his changes are pretty evident now already in the start of spring training. What have you seen from him?
Yeah, it's going to take a little while to really watch that, and the consistency is going to be the key there. But he had a very big delivery, and he has simplified that a little bit. He also would change things up quite a bit. So that's where it's going to take time. Does he stick with what he is doing right now? But he needed to get, in my opinion, and talking to some others, he needed to get a little bit more control over that delivery so he had better command over his pitches. And he, much like Kyle Seager, you've always heard about what a tinkerer he was with his swing, and Kyle spent so much time poring over videos and trying to find answers, not so much last year, but before last year. It's been the same way with Kikuchi. He is a guy that would change things from start to start, and that's usually not the best way to go as a pitcher. So I'll be interested to follow him as he goes through the spring and takes it into the season, but you could tell right away that the delivery was a little bit shorter.
Shannon Dreher on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Thanks for joining us quickly today, Shannon. Enjoy the weather down there.
Kenny? Oh, yeah, no rain down here. It's great.
Lots of rain up here, and it's not.
Sorry.
All right. Take care, Shannon.
Hi, Shannon.
Hey, a lot of people here hitting us up on Twitter. I don't know if you're getting the same thing. Nobody wants Josh Norman or Greg Olson. Nobody whatsoever. They think they're all washed up. They think it'd be a waste of cap money, et cetera, et cetera. I guess my question would be, if you're Pete Carroll, you're John Schneider.
Yeah.
When you talk to these guys, whether you meet with them or you're just on the phone, how do you know if they're washed up physically? Do they work them out? Like, isn't that a two-way street?
They have guys come in for workouts. I've always assumed this is obviously from the point of view of a reporter, so I don't have, you know, the perception or the idea that a player would about the number of workouts you do. I always assume that when you hear about a guy coming in for a workout, the team's already pretty interested in signing him. They just need last minute things. I think by that point, they've already done a ton of research on that person. So it's not like they bring him in and they just see, like, oh, how's he look when he moves? That's a little bit of it. But I feel like the workout is kind of a formality to just kind of get an eye test for guys. Otherwise, like, you already know.
But how would you know? How would you know a year later? I guess it's not a year later. Not that much time has passed. What kind of shape a Greg Olson's in?
Which is fair to ask. You mean from last season now?
Well, what he's going to be in a year. A lot of it just seems like guesswork to me.
Well, yeah, and part of it could be looking at the trends of that player or that position. I mean, it is a lot of guesswork. You see them put in a ton of research. Every single draft pick they make takes a ton of research, and you still don't hit on all of them.
But they're younger, so it's okay. We're going to ask Michael Bumpus about all these guys next at 710 ESPN Seattle.